Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the KP Podcast. I'm Pete, sitting here with Keith. We're coming to you from the forum. And again, today, we want to touch on the market because things are just moving fast. A lot of people, this is on everybody's mind, right? You know, hey, is it going to crash? What's going on? I see a lot of inventory. Neighbor's house has been sitting. I see no one going through that open house. Oh, my God. Freak out. And so this is obviously what we hear or what questions we're getting from our agents, their clients, everybody we run into. Oh, you're in real estate. What's going on? So let's kind of dive in because, you know, where real estate usually moves pretty slow, man, things have been moving pretty quick here lately.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting because I've been hearing more and more that people are now more and more confident that a dip is coming and more confident that prices are going to go down. And we're talking about normal consumers. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the case. However, I think the sentiment out there from a lot of the consumers are thinking, hey, like, this is going to take a drop at some point, mm-hmm. right? And we're starting to see a lot of these numbers shift. And like we talked about in an earlier podcast, that this September area is getting really close to deciding where we're going to be sitting potentially long term.
How this thing is looking. I think one of the other things is we're talking about, you know, what's kind of hitting the mainstream. And we've been talking about inflation for over a year now. We've mentioned on so many podcasts and, you know, it was way lower than this, half of what it is now. But, you know, now it's just like everyone's talking about it, which was never the case before. Yeah. I even saw a commercial the other day for like a furniture store or something. And like one of the first lines was, are you getting hit with inflation? Well, you know, come on down to this deal or whatever it was. And I was like, oh, my God, it's in like commercials and posts and everything right now. So it's on everybody's mind. So but let's talk about what's going on with our market here. So obviously anybody in the Phoenix metro market has seen it. Inventory has gone up a lot since the beginning of the year. Tripled since the beginning
Look
of the year.
Look at this, 18,000 active
listings, right? So
Weren't we just talking and it was like under four and we were like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
It was like, I think it was the low fours at the beginning of the year. So that's an important point, right? Is that we're coming off of, we hit record lows, I think it was February of this year. We hit all time record low as long as we've been keeping records. And so that was, what are we now? August? So that was 6 months ago?
Yeah.
6 months ago, we were sitting at all-time record lows. And then here we are, tripled, which is true. We have more than tripled. You know, we're sitting at just over 18,000 active listings. But again, in perspective, we're coming off of historical lows. Mm-hmm. And it's still, in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're kind of getting closer to being back in line, but still kind of low.
Well, and it's something we also talked about, I think it was last month, that the rate at which those listings are increasing is slowing, right? Like they can't continue, just like you can't keep dropping the listings and supply at that massive of a rate. At some point, it starts to curve out, and we're seeing the same thing. We're not doubling every 2 weeks like we were at the very beginning. Like it was getting crazy there. And now we're starting to see, okay, we've tripled since the beginning. But it's, you know, we've gone from 16 to 17 to 18. It's a little bit more of a slower pace versus early months. I mean, we went from 4 to like 8,000, which felt like overnight, you know, which is a massive increase.
I think that's the thing, too, is how quickly it happened. You know, so it was very quick. But again, we're coming just from such suppressed levels, such low, low levels. And then a big part of that is, you know, when we're looking at, I was just looking at the chart this morning. And I think it's hard for people to realize that we've only had 2 months this year. So we're 7 months behind us. We're in August now. Only two of these 5 months have had more listings than last year. So, you know, that's hard for people to fathom. But what is that telling us is that we're not all of a sudden getting like flooded with a ton of new inventory going in. The rate of increase in inventory has definitely got up. But what really happened was the demand got just shut down. You know, I mean, rates went up, hit, you know, up near 6% on the 30-year mortgage. Now they're down back around to 5%. But I mean, man, all of a sudden it was like they shut the door right there with the Fed raising those rates.
Well, when you pair pricing and rates all in the same window, quickly. I mean, you're also not giving time for lenders and other mortgage companies to come out with different products that can help combat some of the changes in affordability. When it happens overnight, you only have your original programs. Like, it's a race against time to try and get something to help affordability, so demand just gets shut down.
Well, and not even different programs, but just the volatility in that rate market was causing issues. You had, you know, in the secondary market, not to go too far into it, but, you know, we were having problems where they were saying, well, we can't even go that high in rates because nobody will buy it on the secondary market. So you've got these massive fluctuations happening so quickly. And that's what we were talking about is, hey guys, we don't need the rates to drop back to where they were. We just need this thing to stabilize because it was just, it was like zigzag crisscross all over the map. I mean, up, down, just moving crazy volatility. So stabilization is what's needed in that rate environment so that we can kind of just figure things out. Go, okay, here's where we're at. Let's move forward.
You know, it was funny because a couple weeks ago, I needed to get gas. And I'm sitting driving into the pump and I'm looking at the gas. The, you know, everybody sees the signs and they're sitting out there and they show and display the prices. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm driving in and I see one price. And as I get close to the sign, it's a different price. And I'm just like, okay, well, what happened? Right? It just went up 10 cents. And I was just like, okay, that's funny. And then I get to the pump and it's 5 cents lower than what that 10 cents was. And I'm like, okay, guys, like figure your stuff out here. Like at least
get it together.
Yeah. And so it makes me think of that all the time. And that's kind of like the buyer sentiment is like, okay, well, you could lock rates at 10 o'clock and lock rates at noon and lock rates at 2. And we're talking about massive point differentials in a single day, in an hour sometimes.
So, and that's the whole point is that locks people up, man. They're like, they're free.
Well,
they're
when
like,
do I pull the trigger?
Yeah. And so they're just like, I'm just going to wait because this is crazy, you know? So that's a lot of what we've got. But we definitely have an affordability issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no way about around that. So prices are high. Now that you've got rates up higher, you know, you've got affordability issues. But the thing we've talked about so many times too is, you know, what are the alternatives? Because rents are continuing to rise. So, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that people somehow seem to forget sometimes is they go, okay, well, you know, no one's going to buy because the market, and therefore the market's going to crash. And you go, but where are those people living? Because vacancy rates are all-time lows. We've got, and that's both for homeowners and for rentals. And so if they can't buy the house, then their only other option is to go live with parents or family or to rent. So that's putting more pressure on rent. And now those are going up. So, you know, at that point they start to look at, should I lock in this rate here or go to a rent where maybe it keeps going? I have no control over what's happening there. And it's certainly not cheaper, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of options out there. And I still look at our marketplace as something that it's different and new for us. However, we saw other markets do something that helped raise their affordability matrix like to a whole nother level. And obviously we need income to catch up and we need some of these other things to, you know, maybe make affordability a little bit better, right? With wages and things like that. But I do look over at California, not necessarily to compare it. However, they went into a new threshold of trying to find ways to make houses affordable. They had weird arms. They had 40-year type situations that we hadn't seen in other markets. The FHA and conventional loan limits went through the roof. They went way higher than everywhere else in the marketplace. We haven't seen really buyers buy with three different individuals in a joint tenancy type situation, buying with your parents and your brother or your sister, or your family, because that's the only way you can afford it. There's still that big giant box that California has shown us over the last, you know, 5 years that they've been in that Arizona could get into. You know, that could change the affordability conversation if you start thinking about those things. The hard part was is Arizona used to be really, really affordable for an individual first-time home buyer with a brand new job here, which makes it really easy. So that's where all that desire comes. So I'm interested to see, okay, let's say it's not as affordable for that homeowner anymore, that first-time home buyer, brand new job type situation. But what's that second level of affordability look like? Are there going to be adjustments to help, you know, overcome that gap and surprise us, if you will?
Yeah, I definitely think people get creative and figure out solutions with that. But in the meantime, what happens and what we see happen all the time in all of these cities, you know, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, Chicago, New York, Miami, I mean, the list goes on, is like we've said before, these cities have been unaffordable for a long time.
Yep.
And so we, like you said, we've never had to experience that here in Arizona. And so people aren't used to it. But what we've talked about before, it's not necessarily a good thing, but it's a fact of life. Yeah. And so people's living standard ends up going down because what you have to do is, well, maybe I don't get the house that I want. Maybe I'm not in the area that I want. Maybe I have to take a roommate. Maybe I have to go live with two other people. And, you know, we're talking to the investors and our landlords, and that's exactly what they're seeing. People doubling up, tripling up, in some cases, quadrupling up just to afford rents. I mean, that's not good, but that's what's happening. Yep. And so, you know, that's when people go, well, the affordability is an issue, therefore prices have to come down. They don't have to, they could, but we've seen it cases throughout the last 30, 40 years, that affordability didn't come down because you still had more people in these markets looking for housing than there's available housing. So that keeps the price up because even if you go, well, hell, the majority of the people can no longer afford that house. Yeah, but can someone afford it? Because then they'll take it because there's still not enough.
Correct.
And so until we get that place where there's vacancies and excess housing, it doesn't matter because as long as you still have that one person who can afford it, it kind of screws everyone else. And that sucks for them, but that's the unfortunate truth.
You know, and it brings that, that's a really good point. You think about these big cities that have been unaffordable for a while, right? They're the ones that have the highest roommate per capita, if you will. Yeah. Ever be, and that's they almost have to because that's what's required.
And then the sad part, I don't know, it's just different. If you travel, and then we're just talking about inside the United States, outside the United States, guys, go to Europe, go to Australia, go to some of these other places. Most people, number one, they don't own, they're renting. And then number two, they're living in much smaller places, they're living with extended family or roommates. Like, we're very fortunate and lucky in this country to have what we have, and it's you know. You're not sitting here going, it's okay, you know, that that's the way we should go. But the point is, that's what happens, you know, unfortunately.
You might have to sacrifice the 5-bedroom, 4,000 square foot house that you were wanting to buy a couple of years ago back to the normal 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,500. Like, that's just what it is.
Like we say is, stop worrying about timing that market so much, guys. Like, man, don't stretch. But if you can afford it and lock in this rate, get in there.
Yeah.
Might prices come down next year? Yeah, they might. I'd have no idea. We have no crystal ball. But you know, look at what these alternatives are and, you know, what especially we've got here in the metro market. Could they dip for a while? Of course they could. But man, we still got more people than we have housing. That's still a fundamental issue that hasn't been fixed.
Yeah. And I think the other cool thing to think about is if rents continue to rise, would you rather be in a rental and have your rents go up next year and now you're in the same scramble mode again versus you just pull the trigger and you buy something? The appreciation of the house, it could depreciate, right? Like, you could, it could go down. Your values are a little lower than what they were, but that doesn't make a difference if you're not selling the house.
Right.
What you have to know is that, okay, your mortgage payment is still the same. Mm-hmm. It's what you expected it to be. That is so, that's the security that people want. If you go get a rental and your rents go up 10% next month, like, what are you really, like, really risking at that point, you know?
In addition to all your other expenses going up. And so that's the thing is, our other expenses might go up, but that mortgage is locked in.
Yep.
And so it actually becomes more affordable over time. Is as inflation drives up, food prices, gas prices, your cell phone bill, your TV, your wages, everything, that if that mortgage stays the same, it actually gets relatively cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's, you know, what we're looking at here, guys. It's a very interesting time, to say the least, here in our particular market. But let's touch on a couple of these other points here before kind of going what we're looking for, you know, going forward. So listing cancellations shooting up. And I think a lot of people misunderstand what that means. They look at that and they go, oh no, listing cancellations are shooting up. Right. So let's think that one through. So in order for prices to crash, we need to have forced selling. If they're canceling, it's because they don't have to sell. They're not forced to sell. And so what you have is sellers who are locked in. Like we've said before, if they can't afford to buy a new place, well, they can't afford to sell. So what they're doing is they're not selling, which is putting more cap on inventory. And we're seeing the listing cancellations shoot up because people are saying, no, I'm not going to sell that. I'm just going to stay here. And I would encourage everybody out there, think about yourself, your family, your neighbors. How many people are in that situation? I guarantee you, if you're listening to this, you know people in that situation.
If you sell your house, where are you going? You're going to be in the same exact box or bubble or window that you're trying to figure it out. And I think that's a big part of it.
And it's going to be much more expensive.
Yeah. And I think sellers are just testing the market. They're like, okay, well, we're at the tail end of this thing. Maybe I can get out and get lucky here. And when they're not getting lucky, they're like, oh, crap. Well, I guess that plan failed. Mm-hmm. I'm canceling and no harm on my back because I didn't pay for anything. Like, that's part of that process, right? So you're seeing a lot of those people test it and think that their house is valued based on the last year and a half we had, and realizing that the demand is not there to push the price 10% over market, yeah, right, like it has been in the past. So, you know, I think some of these prices and the actual value of these homes are regulating a little bit back to where they need to be. It's not decreasing. I think that's the biggest thing that people are seeing. We're not seeing an immediate decrease in price. They're just not ramping way above market price like they were. So it feels like you're not getting as much for your house, or the values aren't going up. But in reality, it's just you're not getting 15% above appraised value, forcing these markets higher than they should be, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, so a couple of the other things here. Obviously, the pace of new listings shot up in May and June. Came back down in July, and here at the beginning of August, we're seeing again, it's sloping down. So they've slowed. So July of this year, and this I think will shock a lot of people, July of 2022 saw fewer new listings than July of 2021. Wow. So we had fewer new listings this year in July than last year.
Just way less sales, yeah, way less purchases.
And the sales, exact, that demand just way down. And the other thing, so especially in our market, guys, the fix and flip and, you know, single investors, second home buyers, short-term rental, that's largely gone right now.
Oh, man.
They're, you know, they're out of the purchases for the most part, the vast majority. Of course, there's always some in there. But, you know, we saw huge numbers of them last year and into the beginning of this year. That's done.
Yep. I think it's important to know that I think these investors are still sitting there waiting. It's not that they don't want to buy. They're just unsure about it right now. They're being patient. They're trying to feel out the market, the rates, all this stuff. And I mean, if we see rates steady out and we know what to expect over the next couple of years, I think we might see some of those come back into the marketplace, yeah, knowing what we see. But until we see a less volatile market, they're not going to be coming flying back anytime soon.
Well, and I'll tell you who in that kind of that group is still buying that we haven't seen really slowing down much is the institutional, yeah, buyers. So the hedge funds and the big companies that are buying them long term, they're still buying. And so those folks are still in there at a slower pace, but they're still purchasing. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're at, if you will. And so what are we watching here? So we're watching, you know, the seasonal curve. So obviously we had a big spike in the seasonal curve, but it was, yep, still the seasonal curve. So what we're looking at is, did we have a dramatic seasonal curve or a complete change? And what I mean by that is, you know, new listings shot up in May and June. Is it going to keep rising and then we're heading to, you know, an overabundance in inventory and then potentially a crash? Or did it shoot up off those lows and then we see this thing leveling out or even, you know, starting to come down and kind of going to a seasonal curve just at higher levels in the last few years? And so far, that's what we're seeing. So we saw the pace slow in July.
Yep.
We're seeing it slow at the beginning of August. So like I've said before, too early to tell, but this is, you know, if we're going to see this thing level out, this is what we would expect to see. Fewer newer listings. So the inventory is still climbing because the demand is still down, but we have less new listings coming. The pace of new stuff coming, the market is slowing. It was slowing last month and it's still slowing now.
And it'll be interesting to see that coming into the fourth quarter, do we see demand pick back up like a normal seasonality curve would be,
right,
where buyers are going to come back in and be like, okay, well, I still really like Arizona. I'm moving down, snowbird type mentality that we've seen so much. It's such a busy season come October, November, going into the first quarter. Does that demand pick up? And I think that's our biggest indicator of like, okay, well, if demand does not pick up through our busier season, if it stays even steady, it's going to be a changed market in what we're looking at. Like, we need, yeah, to see at least a difference in what we're seeing.
And one way or the other, you know, we're probably looking at a dip here at the beginning, yeah, of the year, you know, but that's different than a crash.
Yes.
And so that's kind of, you know, delineating the difference there. And so to your point, Keith, about that demand, that's kind of the tell right here, right? Because the fundamentals inside of the real estate market still look fine, but we don't live in a bubble.
Yep.
And so, you know, what's going to affect this is the overall economy, which is outside of us. And we've said it before, if a crash occurs, if something goes to take this market down, it's coming from outside.
Yep.
It's not the fundamental. This is not 08 where it was driven by a housing crisis. That's, we've got the complete opposite this go around. However, because we don't live on an island and are in a bubble, you know, are we going into a recession? Are we going into a deep recession? Will there be forced selling? Will there be massive layoffs? Things like that are things you can't do anything about. And you could have the strongest housing market in the world, but if that's the case, it's still going to affect you, because then you will have forced selling at that point.
So I guess a hot take question of the podcast here, Pete, if you had to pick one simple fundamental thing to push us over the top, to force a crash, if mm-hmm. something happened, what would be that one fundamental, probably the most, the biggest big rock to throw in the pond that would, you know, force that crash? What do you think that would be?
So I think the biggest factor that you're looking at as to whether any of these will happen is what the Fed policy is going forward and how long will they take that. So we've talked about, you know, how much more do they keep raising rates, and how tight do they make money? And so that's going to determine to, do we end up in a big recession, and then do we end up with massive layoffs, and then do we see forced selling? All of that stuff is kind of dependent on, will they continue to raise and will they tighten money into a slowdown? Because now we have the slowdown. Mm. We have the beginning of that recession. So will they in the coming months start to ease up and kind of try to level this thing out? Or are they just going to go hard and crash this thing into the ground?
When's the next Fed meeting, Pete?
September something or other. I don't remember.
For like the first couple of weeks, I think. Or is it what it is?
I think it's middle of September.
Okay. So at that point in time, because we just passed August, right? Like that's already done.
End of July was the last meeting. They don't have one. They're off for August break, and then they're meeting again mid to late September.
Okay. So guys, keep your eyes and ears open come then. We're going to be doing another podcast, probably reviewing that decision, yeah. I would assume. And really going into, okay, here's one more month of change. What are we looking at?
And I think realistically, it would be foolish to expect that they wouldn't raise there. We expect them to raise there. The question becomes going forward is how much do they raise there? And then exactly, what are their comments?
Are they saying we're going in October again in November?
Yeah. They're saying, guys, we want 75 this time and we're looking
at expect two next time.
And we're going on, or you know what, guys, we might have to start, you know, pulling back off the gas here. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see the comments at that point.
So over the next couple weeks, while you're watching touchdowns, you might want to throw on CNBC as well and see what's going on as we continue to push through our market and see what this thing is going to look like coming into fourth quarter. So appreciate everybody tuning in again. Send us your questions at questions@kpeliteaz.com. We'd love to hear your guys' feedback and any things that you want us to clarify on. We'd love to do that for you. And we'll see you guys here in a couple weeks.
See you guys.